We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is May 2nd. Today is Thursday. And, you know, when we talk about government wanting to do something because we see all of these campus protests, the riots, the violence, it's not just protests. This is actual law breaking. Sometimes doing something is not the thing to do. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. But first, speaking of doing other things legislatively that are not helpful to forming a more perfect union, Arizona has repealed its 1864 abortion ban, and the governor seen signing quickly, that coming from Reuters this morning. And the Senate very quickly moved that through, and they have repealed it. So they voted yesterday on abortion, and that ban would have otherwise taken effect within weeks. The repeal was passed by the Senate in a 16-14 vote, and is expected to be signed by Governor Katie Hobbs very quickly, who is a Democrat. Two Republican senators crossed party lines to vote in favor of repealing the ban. So I ask this question: do Republicans really represent conservatism anymore? When we see how often they cross over party lines to help out the Democrats. We rarely, if ever, I mean, I can't remember the last headline when a Democrat, even one, came over to help a genuinely conservative and morally correct cause. So this is just sad. And the Arizona House last week passed the measure after a handful of Republicans also broke party ranks and voted with Democrats to send it to the Senate. Republican Senator Wendy Rogers, who I know personally, she's a really good senator in Arizona, said in casting her vote to maintain the 1864 ban that repealing the law went against the conservative values of Arizona. She said this: life starts at conception. They got it right in 1864. We need to continue to get it right in 2024. So I applaud her for standing up and for the very few Republicans in Arizona that stood firm. And the question for me is, why should we expect God to continue to bless America when we as a nation persistently and consistently choose evil? We can pray, and we should pray, and perhaps like Sodom and Gomorrah in the book of Genesis, when Abraham was saying, you know, Lord, please spare the city if there's even 100 left, if there's even 10 left. I mean, it got down so small. I mean, there is a remnant. There are still Christian conservatives. I know that you, the AFR family that's listening across the country, are part of that. And you care. We care. And we will persistently stand up for conservative, biblically based, true values. But it's very discouraging when we see how many times evil persists in our nation because of political optics. And sometimes it's not really evil, it's just plain stupid. And this is what happened yesterday in Congress in Washington, D.C., under the guise of simply doing something because of anti-Semitism and the activity on campuses that we've seen over the last few weeks, Columbia, UCLA, and a lot of places in between. So Representative Thomas Massey brought this to national attention yesterday. He said this in an X thread today. This was yesterday. The House will vote on a bill to define anti-Semitism with the intent to increase prosecutions of activity on campuses. So you think, okay, you know, it's good that we condemn anti-Semitism. I don't agree at all with anti-Semitism, but does that mean that Congress should do something? Thomas Massey goes on to say the bill has a problem beyond violating the First Amendment. The definition of anti-Semitism appears nowhere in this bill. Well, why? And he goes on in the thread to say, to find the legally adopted definition of anti-Semitism, one must go to this website below, and it's holocaustremembrance.com. This is coming from a special interest group. So one of the special interest groups that's completely outside of the confines of the four corners of this legislation. So not only is the definition listed there instead of in the legislation itself, so if the legislation points to the definition on a website, the website can change, right? But Massey says one also finds specific examples of anti-Semitic speech. Are those examples made part of the law as well? And he says, do you agree with all of these examples of anti-Semitism? Should people in America be prosecuted for saying these things in all contexts? I think not. This is a poorly conceived, unconstitutional bill, and I will vote no. And some of these examples that are cited by this website, contemporary examples of anti-Semitism in public life, the media, schools, the workplace, and in the religious sphere could, taking into account the overall context, include but are not limited to calling for aiding or justifying the killing or harming of Jews in the name of radical ideology or an extremist view of religion. We probably agree on that one. Making mendacious, dehumanizing, demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews, such as the power of Jews as a collective, such as, especially but not exclusively, the myth of a world Jewish conspiracy or of Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or other social institutions. But then it gets even more interesting. Using the symbols and images associated with classic anti-Semitism, for example, claims of Jews killing Jesus or blood libel, to characterize Israel or Israelis, drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis, holding Jews collectively responsible for the actions of the state of Israel. And this website goes on to say anti-Semitic acts are criminal when they're so defined by the law. So Matt Walsh over at the Daily Wire posted this thread, and he said, you need to understand how crazy this anti-Semitism bill that did pass in the House yesterday. So he said this just passed in the House with wide bipartisan approval. The law requires the Department of Education to adopt the definition of anti-Semitism provided by something called the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. So that's the special interest group that Massey was referring to. Walsh goes on to say the legislation itself never says what the definition is. All it says is the definition is whatever this other group says it is, which is blank bonkers already, because it grants the force of law to whatever the IHRA happens to decree on the subject. But it gets worse. The bill also specifies that the quote-unquote examples of anti-Semitism that this group subjectively came up with will be included in the legal definition. So what happens when the IHRA adds new examples? Does the legal definition change? I mean, this is such a poorly constructed bill. And Section 4 under definitions says that for the purposes of this act, the term definition of anti-Semitism means the definition of anti-Semitism adopted by the IHRA, of which the United States is a member, which definition has been adopted by the Department of State, and 2, includes the contemporary examples of anti-Semitism identified in the IHRA definition. Now it does say, and it says that the definition adopted on May 26, 2016, so maybe it's frozen in time a little bit, but saying that we can't express criticism of the state of Israel, criticism of what we think about their conduct, history and historical fact, that is in the Bible. That Matt Walsh is right. That is bonkers. And yet the House passed this by 320 to 91. 21 Republicans and 70 Democrats voted against it. And you have to understand there is a difference between punishing speech and opinion. That's what's protected under the First Amendment versus punishing conduct. And the left has continually tried to make hate crime punishable under the law and heightened or hate speech and heightened sentencing, heightened punishment, increased punishment, aggravating factors for motivations for crimes rather than just the conduct itself. And so instead of for the Republican majority in the House and Speaker Johnson, instead of focusing on the conduct and the lack of university administration cracking down on that conduct, holding students, faculty, whoever else on campus accountable for their conduct, now it has become about anti-Semitism, which, as we talked yesterday, if you missed the program yesterday, go back and listen to it, afr.net, because this really isn't about anti-Semitism and in a clash between pro-Hamas and pro-Israel groups. This is just the latest vessel and latest iteration of the Marxist ideology of trying to frame this as oppressor versus oppressed, and the new oppressed class is Hamas. And they have framed this, the left has framed it this way on purpose, and Republicans, under the auspices of we need to do something about anti-Semitism, is now pushing through this very poorly conceived law rapidly. It skipped committee, went to the House yesterday, already passed, just so that they could have an optics talking point to say, hey, look, we did something about anti-Semitism. This in no way and in no foreseeable way is this going to be used and abused for other nefarious purposes, right? I mean, that could never happen because, you know, these definitions inside the four corners of the document aren't pointing to some other website that can then be changed at whim. This is utterly nonsensical and utterly stupid. This isn't just evil like what happened in Arizona, repealing the abortion ban. This is Republicans playing right into the Democrats' hands. And Representative Chip Roy, one of our favorite guests on this program, ranted about this on the House floor yesterday on the Thought Police. And listen to this full clip because he is so right. This is what he had to say about this anti-Semitism bill that has absolutely no business going to the Senate, and hopefully it will not pass there. But this is what Chip Roy had to say.
Yet again today on the floor of the House of Representatives, we had another show vote to make people feel good about themselves by passing a bill that says anti-Semitism in the title. That's what happened. And it was put on the floor by Republican leadership. And it was put on the floor by Republican leadership despite knowing that it was pulled from going through committee. We didn't have a chance to amend it. We didn't have a chance to discuss it, to debate it. We didn't have a hearing on it. It was jammed through to take advantage of this political moment while all of these horrific things are going around the country. Republican leadership wanted to score political points, so they moved through legislation without the kind of deliberation, debate that is supposed to be carried out by the people in this chamber. As a result, today, a significant number of my Republican colleagues, including myself, voted no. As a result, we will be accused of, I don't know, being for anti-Semitic behavior, being accused by our friends and allies of not wanting to support Israel, supporting our Jewish American colleagues and friends, constituents, fellow Americans. Nothing could be further from the truth, but that's what will happen. And it'll happen because we dared to stand up and say, we don't believe in thought police. We don't believe that a bill should be brought to the floor of the United States House of Representatives, having not gone through committee, that has a reference in it to international organizations' definitions, literally in the statute, and then taking that international organization's definition and then literally in the statute representing and referencing the examples of anti-Semitic behavior. Now, I find the vast majority of the things that were listed in that to be horrific activity, most likely, if not certainly, anti-Semitic, at least in most contexts. Some of them are problematic. In totality, they certainly raise First Amendment concerns. They certainly raise concerns about something that I've opposed to the best of my knowledge and ability, reading through pieces of legislation at every turn and every vote, to oppose the whole notion of hate speech, hate crimes, thought police, thought crimes, putting the government into your head and your motivations when you're engaged in criminal behavior. Criminal behavior is criminal behavior. Violating people's civil rights is violating people's civil rights. But when we want to insert the government into what you're thinking and what motivates you, you are empowering that which should never be empowered. The ability of the government to police thought, to police speech, to police your views, not the views that carry out then the actions. The actions are the problem. Police the actions.
That was Representative Chip Roy, and I could not agree more. So this concerns House Resolution 6090, if you want to go and look that up. The preamble says to provide for the consideration of a definition of anti-Semitism set forth by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance for the enforcement of federal anti-discrimination laws concerning education programs or activities and for other purposes. So Representative Jim Jordan voted for this bill, and he will join us to explain why, coming up right after this.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we are talking about the House voting in a wide bipartisan fashion late yesterday on House Resolution 6090, which is to provide for the consideration of a definition of anti-Semitism set forth not by Congress, but by an external policy or special interest group called the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance for the enforcement, the legislation goes on to say, of federal anti-discrimination laws concerning education programs or activities and for other purposes. So I have a lot of concerns about this bill, and we're trying to get a hold of Representative Jim Jordan. He will hopefully join us very shortly here, because he was one of the Republicans that, and I have great respect for him. He is one of the Republicans that voted for this bill. He also joined Mark Levin late yesterday, and I was listening to the segment on Mark Levin's show where both of them were very much in favor of this legislation, in spite of I think the obvious concerns. And of course, Speaker Mike Johnson is very much in favor of this legislation. And it was brought to the floor by Representative Lawler, and had a number of other sponsors, including, interestingly, Miller of Ohio, who himself is Jewish. So, you know, that makes sense. A few others. And then also Elise Stefanik was one of the co-sponsors. And they introduced the bill. It was referred to committee, but as you heard in the last segment with Representative Chip Roy, they skipped committee, brought it to the floor, voted on it very quickly. And this is one of those things that, to me, just evidences why the process of Congress and any legislative body that is making law is intended by our founders to move very slowly, so that we don't get to a point where this type of legislation that didn't go through committee, didn't have an opportunity to really be vetted by the American people. I mean, I learned about this kind of late yesterday from Representative Massey, tweeting about it. And then a lot of other people, including Matt Walsh and others that I've referenced, picked up on that tweet. And then it went a little bit viral yesterday. But we certainly didn't have time to, you know, go through it and parse it and then meaningfully contact our representatives, express concerns, ask questions before they voted on it. And the process should not work like that. And even though we do have, in a sense, a trustee form of government in terms of our representatives, they represent us, but they are not necessarily bound by the will of the majority of their constituency, for example. And we see that at a lot of times that representatives don't go by the majority will of the people. And that's okay, because we are not a direct democracy. We have elements of democracy in our constitutional republic. But this is one of those times that it shows why, when we have a trustee form of government, we need to be able to trust that form of government, that the people who are in those offices will do the right thing and will take the time to consider meaningfully what defining anti-Semitism for purposes of legislation that is being used now, or if it passes the Senate and is signed into law, for the Department of Education, for other purposes, and potentially punishing speech, having the thought police and the hate speech police, where that leads us as a country. And this is exactly why, as much as we as conservatives are so against anything that is remotely anti-Semitic, we shouldn't hate people based on anything, but particularly based on their national heritage, their, you know, their race, their national origin. But if people decide to do that and speak that, we can condemn the speech. But the First Amendment provides protection for even speech and thoughts and opinions that we would consider utterly reprehensible and heinous. And the reason for that is because I don't want my speech here at AFR every morning when I teach the truth of the gospel of Christ to be considered by others, and maybe it is, as reprehensible, bigoted, you know, blah, 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 all of those assertions, to then in any way be punishable by law or criminalized. I mean, that's the very foundation of the First Amendment. And if we go down this road, and under the auspices of, oh, we can't have any sort of sentiment of anti-Semitism, and we need to guard against that, and we need to, for optics purposes, say we did something, then that can get us down a very slippery slope really quickly. I mean, there's a reason that the slippery slope is one of the logical fallacies. And we are still waiting on Representative Jim Jordan and his aide, who is a good friend, is texting me asking if he is on yet. And I said no. And he said, we're on the hunt. So if we get Representative Jim Jordan, hopefully he will join us quickly. Because I'm very interested in even with listening to his conversation with Mark Levin yesterday. And it makes sense, again, you know, why Mark Levin would be for this type of legislation. But at the same time, even if we agree with this, so for example, I'm not of Jewish heritage, right? So I don't have that personal vested interest. But if this was a bill that said we are going to forcibly punish through law and criminalize any sort of quote-unquote hate speech against Christians, for example, I would not be for that. Even though I am a Christian, I don't like when people use the Lord's name in vain, for example. That's one of the worst things, I think, in terms of, you know, all other kinds of foul language that can be used. That is the thing that bothers me as a Christian the most, taking the Lord's name in vain, because even though we are supposed to have pure speech as Christians, and that's a little bit contextual, of course, and cultural. We all know what the difference is between pure speech and foul speech. That is something, taking the Lord's name in vain is something that doesn't change based on culture or context. And yet, for those who choose to do that, I don't want the government to go and punish them. I would like them to have the guilt and be convicted of their own conscience, but not to have the government tell them what they can and cannot say. This just gets us into a scenario and a situation that eventually we will have punishment by the government for things and opinions that we hold. And that's where we are rapidly escalating downward. And so this bill, H.R. 6090, is going to the Senate. We at least have the opportunity to hopefully not have it pass there. And so if you are concerned about this, and I think you should be, go and read the text of the bill. It's actually not very long. And read some of these articles that are talking about it, and certainly Representative Massey's thread on social media, and get a hold of your senator and explain what you think about it. And if you, like me, think that there are huge concerns about the other purposes and taking the definition from a website that is outside the four corners of the documents that can be revised or manipulated, and are these examples of so-called anti-Semitic speech part and parcel of this law now? I mean, we really don't know. It's not very clear. And one of the things that the law in general, not talking about this specific law, but just the law in general, provides for, is that when there is legislation that is so overbroad, it can be void for vagueness, because we have to be, as Americans, put on proper notice of a violation or a potential violation of a law, because that's fundamental due process. And so there is the potential that if this was ever challenged or ever sought to be enforced and then challenged in a court of law, then it may not hold up. But we don't want to have the potential of litigation be the only way that we stop this, frankly. So this legislation is, there are so many different ways I think that it is problematic. It is concerning, and Section 4 puts out those definitions, and then Section 5, the rule of construction for the Civil Rights Act, other rules of construction, and then basically just goes on to codify this other interest group in Washington as the working definition. So I'm not sure that we are going to get Representative Jim Jordan today, but hopefully that was at least a little bit more info for you. So let's switch topics here, so that and we can always come back to this if we get Representative Jim Jordan. But with all of this going on in Congress, there is still a move now by Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene and also Representative Massey to oust Speaker Johnson. So this coming from the Washington Post this morning, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene on Wednesday, yesterday morning, pledged to trigger her motion to oust Speaker Mike Johnson as the top leader of the House. Her chances of success, however, are in doubt, because House Democrat leadership has pledged to rescue Johnson from the Congresswoman's motion to vacate. Republicans hold only a 2-vote House majority, standing alongside Representative Massey, who also supports removing Johnson. Green announced during a morning news conference that she is formally bringing up her motion next week. She intends to act under special rules for forcing the House to vote on the motion within 2 full legislative days. Republican leadership will then decide when to bring up the vote once Green triggers it. ABC says this: Massey said they were also giving Johnson time to think and suggested again that he resign. Johnson flatly rejected Massey's previous call for him to step down. Johnson has defended himself against the threat by stating that he is doing his job within the confines of the narrowest House majority in history. So I personally, and I think all of you know my opinion on this, I don't think that this is wise heading into November. I don't think this is wise for a lot of reasons, but also who could possibly replace Johnson? Because there is only a 2-vote House majority of Republicans, it is very possible, and if not even likely, that we would end up with a House Speaker Hakeem Jeffries, which would, I guarantee you, regardless of what anyone thinks of Representative Johnson and Speaker Johnson, Hakeem Jeffries would be worse. And I've had to sit here and think, knowing Speaker Johnson personally for a long time, for years, some of this that seems out of character for him. But one of the things that I recalled in a previous conversation that I've had with him, and this was many years ago, when we were talking about a younger representative and, you know, some of the ways that some of these members of Congress can kind of go out on their own and do some maybe bombastic things and headlines and optics, you know, and other things. And he said to me, you know, Congress is a team sport. This is not about the individual. It's about your caucus. It's about your coalition. And you always have to remember that you're part of a team. And he said, you know, that he wished that more Republican representatives would understand that. And I was thinking about this the other day in the context of some of these actions, like bringing Ukraine funding to the floor, a few of these other things that seem to go against what we would have expected from him personally. And I think, and I may be wrong on this, this is just my opinion, but I think that it may be that he really thinks he's doing the right thing because of that view of being a team sport. And if the majority of the House, not just his own caucus, want this, then he sees himself more as a facilitator. And whether or not we agree with that, that could at least, in my view, explain some of these other things that maybe go against when he just had one individual vote and he was speaking only on behalf of himself and his constituents, of course, in his own district. He's now in a different position. And it's interesting because I don't personally think that necessarily jives with the worldview otherwise. But, you know, maybe it's an explanation. Anyway, we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28 or $140, helps to rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And Representative Jordan's aides sends his apologies and says he feels bad. And that's okay, because usually Representative Jordan is very much on it. And so hopefully he is okay and, you know, just maybe needed an extra cup of coffee or something this morning. So we will get him on soon to talk about his perspective on this anti-Semitism bill. And again, you can go to the congressional page. This is House Resolution 6090 that we are talking about, that the House voted on late yesterday and passed with wide bipartisan support. It is, in my view, a very problematic piece of legislation to borrow an outside definition from a special interest group and then seek to codify that somehow into the four corners of the document when you are referring to an outside website and not even taking that definition and putting it in the plain text of the legislation. I mean, this was just, in my view, very poorly constructed. But joining us now to have the rebuttal to your opponent that didn't show up, Ron Coleman. I think it was that Jim Jordan just doesn't want to go head to head with you because you were such a prolific litigator and First Amendment analyst that he just decided to go and have that one more cup of coffee and donut this morning. So good morning. Yes. So good morning. And what are your thoughts on HR 6090?
I agree with you. I think mistake. And what bothers me about it, there are two things that bother me about it. I think it's obvious that it is rife with First Amendment problems. And yes, it is poorly constructed, as you observe. But the two things that really get under my skin are that, on the one hand, it represents a failure, a political failure of the executive branch, which legislatures feel that they can somehow remedy, which they can't. And there probably are some things that they could do to get the executive branch to enforce existing laws against violence, but they don't. They don't do those things. And number two, I just think it's bad politics, although, God, I know the politicians seem to do it all the time, to just pass a law when it seems that people say, well, gosh, we need to do something. We need to do something. It's not a matter of needing to do something, especially when you do something that may actually end up being counterproductive. And it's not a well-written law, as my wife, the writer Jane Coleman, and lawyer such as she is, pointed out a while ago in Legal Insurrection. The definition that they want to refer to, which you point out isn't even really included the IHRA definition, to just refer to a website, that is some pretty lazy lawmaking. But it's fuzzy. It's not very clear. And that's not to say that there isn't a lot of anti-Semitism underlying so-called anti-Zionist, not only protests, but policies and movements and violence. There is. But what you need to focus on is the violence, is the actual violation of real rights, not people's feelings getting hurt. And
right.
What's happening around the country is the opposite.
Right. And this is, to me, why this whole idea of just, we need to do something, and Congress, yep, just taking action and saying, oh, no, I mean, hold a press conference, or have a resolution that condemns anti-Semitism and, these motivations as a Republican majority. I mean, all that stuff is fine, these declarations, all of this. But this, to me, just seems like it was very rushed legislation. It was a push for optics reasons that can now be taken and maybe manipulated out of context, because we know that the left loves to do that a lot. And especially when we're talking about using a definition that is from an outside website. I mean, in your reading of this bill, I mean, even though they reference the definition as it was back in May of 2016, the examples that they say that they cite to that are listed on the website aren't listed in the legislation. So what happens if this special interest group just adds more examples that maybe have nothing to do with anti-Semitism, that are maybe things that, have nothing whatsoever to do with that? I mean, are those now potentially part of this legislation? I mean, where do we freeze the moment in time? I mean, there are just a lot of really big concerns here.
No, it's just not how you do things. Also, I don't think examples generally belong in legislation at all. That's not how you write it. It's not how you write a law.
Right.
maybe when you're talking about weights and measures or something like that, but this is a very, look, the government's involved in too many things, and yes, it is appropriate for us to say that if the federal government is going to be doling out money to colleges, and that includes in the form of student loans, and it certainly includes in the form of forgiven student loans, that it ought to place conditions on them that are consistent with our national interest. But that is such a slippery slope that, you know, Jenna, when we argued this Lance case in the Supreme Court, one of the big questions that people had difficulty understanding was, can Congress condition the granting of money or can make it, or put conditions on the receipt of a benefit like trademark registration that are unconstitutional? And the answer is no. Now, if there is a program whose purpose is, let's say, celebrating black lesbian art, okay, well, you and I wish they wouldn't have programs like that, but if Congress decided in its profound August wisdom to do so, then it could say that black lesbian art has to be produced by black lesbians, and that would be part of congressional intent, and that would be a much harder challenge. But what Congress can't do is say, we're going to make grants to schools to promote art education and then institute rules, or even include in that legislation, rules regarding the general thrust of the law that are viewpoint discriminatory or even content discriminatory. Here we have too much money being given to colleges in general. Higher education has become the biggest, maybe the biggest racket in this country. And obviously, there's going to be an attempt to use that as a way to shape policy. This is a bad way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very bad way to do it. And it's disappointing, in my view, that people didn't take the Representative Massey or the Representative Chip Roy approach and say, well, hold on a minute. You know, we get why the optics matter, but let's be considered as a legislative body and maybe take our time a little bit with that. But Ron Coleman with the Dillon Law Firm, really appreciate your time this morning. And just in the last 8 minutes we have here, we have Representative Jim Jordan calling in, so I want to give him time here. And so thanks so much, Representative Jordan, for calling in. And I know there were a few other topics we wanted to get to. We will another day. I just want to ask you what your view was on why you voted yes for this bill, H.R. 6090.
The anti-Semitism bill?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's going on campus is radical conduct. It's not First Amendment protected speech. When you have students who are taking over buildings, taking over the campus area and harassing and intimidating and attacking Jewish students, that is just wrong. And so we've launched an investigation at the Judiciary Committee into, we want to know, you know, the students who are engaged in this activity. The Immigration Nationality Act is real clear. It says if you're espousing or supporting terrorist activity, that's cause for removal. That's cause for, and right now we know that at Columbia University, for example, 55% of the students are on some kind of visa. So we want to know, were the students engaged in the radical activity, were they on a visa? If so, is the State Department now actively moving to revoke those visas? And if the State Department is revoking the visas, then the Department of Homeland Security is supposed to start removal proceedings and remove them from the country. And that, to me, seems to be the three sort of fundamental questions that the American people would like answers to as they watch day after day this chaos happen on our college campuses.
Yeah, I think those are great questions, and I would certainly support removing visas for anyone who engages in actual violence. But it seems like all of that could be done outside of this particular Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, because there's a difference between investigating the conduct versus taking a definition borrowed from an outside policy group, inserting it into legislation that would mandate the Department of Education adopt a very broad definition and a certain perception of Jews that is now in a piece of legislation that seems to be very easily manipulated.
Well, I was comfortable with it. The legislation did refer to certain examples of statements and conduct that could be anti-Semitic behavior, but the actual legislation, I was comfortable with the legislation, as were, you know, the vast majority of Republicans and frankly a majority of Democrats. And so I was comfortable with that, but I think the key is what the speaker announced a couple days ago, along with several members of leadership in the Republican conference in the House and committee chairman, how we should start investing. We need to look at the money going to these campuses. We need to look at how it, whether outside the federal dollars go to these campuses, outside money may be being used to bring in agitators to stir this up. So some of these people may not have been just students engaged in unlawful activity. So we need to investigate all that. And our angle in the Judiciary Committee is looking at the visa issue.
Yeah, and certainly we support that. And I watched the press conference that you and others with Speaker Johnson had the other day, and very well said and very well done, because I think it's very frustrating for Americans to see that some of our tax dollars are going to fund these institutions, regardless of how they're bringing in or maybe supporting outside agitators, but also that the administration is doing nothing, not even in some instances allowing police to come in.
Yeah, the biggest problem in these places is the people in charge need to be in charge. The leaders are supposed to lead, and right now I think in many of these universities, the university leadership is not leading, and certainly the White House doesn't seem to be doing much of anything. So, I wouldn't just say it's a significant amount of taxpayer dollars in the form of grants and research grants and other money go to these universities. The taxpayers, I think, have a real concern with all that money going there and this kind of crazy activity going on. Not to mention, what are they teaching in some of these places when it comes to this woke ideology and this DEI and everything else? That's just crazy.
Yeah, and we saw that there was a biography or part of the bio of one of the students who is at Columbia, who's like a PhD student that was serving as one of the spokespersons, for lack of, not a formal title. I'm sure she's not having business cards made up, but, that she's speaking on behalf of these groups that literally refers to being a Marxist and a trained Marxist, and prior to coming to Columbia, having a liberal view and engaging in policy that advanced Marxism. And this, to me, just seems like the next iteration of what we saw in 2020 with BLM.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities, and I think people are making that same analysis that you just talked about there, Jenna. So, yeah, we remember what that was like, that whole summer, the violence, the 100-day siege on a federal court building in Portland, and all the attacks on law enforcement, and now we got this issue, this anti-Semitic crazy behavior. And it's also just the behavior is anti-Israel. I mean, these students and radicals are saying things about, our dearest and closest friend, the state of Israel, that are just flat out wrong.
And last question for you, Jim Jordan, and I so appreciate your time, Congressman.
Sure.
The Biden administration has also said that they're looking at bringing in Hamas refugees that can actually elect on their forms that the Israeli government is their persecutor.
Oh,
I mean, that's
goodness.
Ridiculous.
There's all of that is just crazy. I mean, I do not get it. I didn't get when the president in the State of the Union address said he was going to put a temporary port in Gaza and give supplies to Gaza. I mean, it's like isn't it sort of just basic warfare? If you want one side to win, you don't give supplies.
You don't
to the
fund
other side,
both. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, and hope you're doing well. And thank you again so much for hopping on even last minute. That's all the time we have this morning for Jenna Ellis in the Morning. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at afr.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.